Wonder What Today with Mark Sutcliffe returns on 1310 News and simulcast on Rogers TV.
As you know, the federal government's budget this week was presented as being very much an attempt to create gender equality in Canada. The word gender appeared something like 358 times in the 367 pages of the budget. But Andrea Morozik writes in the National Post that a truly pro-woman budget wouldn't try to tell her how to run her life. Andrea Morozik is family program director at CARDIS, a public policy think tank, and joins us on Ottawa Today. Good morning.
Good morning, Mark. How are you?
Great. How are you?
Good. Doing well.
So what is it about this budget that is telling you how to live your life?
Right. So I counted the number of references to women. 708 is what I got. And there's a lot of telling women to get into various industries. There's incentives for entry into the skilled trades, et cetera. As I wrote in the National Post, how would we feel if there was that much time spent telling men what to do? Men, not enough of you are in kindergarten teachers. Not enough of you are nurses. How would we feel if we reversed that and sort of micromanaged the lives and choices of men? I really felt like it was patronizing as I read through the some 300 odd pages, claiming what is essentially an attempt to raise the GDP is somehow a gender equity budget. That's actually what really bothered me, was pretending that raising the GDP is something else, because that's what this budget is about. That's legitimate, but don't tell me that it's in favor of women's rights or my choices, when clearly it's not.
Yeah, I guess there's a couple of interesting things about that. One is that if they're in a different time, a government were saying, or in a different place perhaps, a government were saying, we need more economic growth and prosperity, therefore more women need to work, that would almost sound authoritarian in nature, wouldn't it? It almost sounds like something a Soviet government would do, to say we need more economic progress, therefore we're ordering more people to go to work.
Yeah, actually, well, my parents escaped Soviet communism, and that's something that my mom actually did say. It sounds Soviet. And that's what this budget does say, though. And really, what they're looking for is they've raised the issue of the percent of women working, and clearly they aim to get that boosted so that they can have greater tax dollars. Essentially, they're saying, out of one side of their mouth, they're saying women's work isn't valued. But at the other side, it's very clear they don't value a lot of women's caregiving work. When women are mothers or caring for seniors or working part-time because they're volunteering, they're in schools, they're educators, they're cooks, they're drivers, they're all these things that parents do, whether male or female, basically the government is saying that's not valuable because you don't pay taxes on it. And I think that's insulting. I think it's also counterproductive, because we need that volunteer community. We need those people who have part-time flexibility. The other day, I'm ashamed of this, the other day a friend of mine had to unfortunately go to the hospital, and she needed a pickup at the end of her stay there, and I couldn't do it because I was at work and there was something that I couldn't get out of. We need people who have part-time flexibility to just be good friends and neighbors and go and get their friends when they have a stay in the hospital. And so I'm ashamed to say I couldn't do it. But how do we feel about just professionalizing all of these things and ensuring that everybody is in a 9-to-5 paying taxable job? That's what this budget was about.
Yeah, and I obviously, when I make that Soviet comparison, I'm not suggesting that that's the government's tone, or it's their motives, or that kind of thing. But I can see how it could be interpreted that way by some people. The presumption in the budget is that the reason that women are not working is not because they don't necessarily want to work, or when I say working, I mean working outside the home, working in traditional jobs. That it's not because they don't want to, it's because they can't, because something's holding them back. There's a presumption that every woman wants to be working in a workplace, right?
There's also a presumption that there's barriers and discrimination placed. And I'm not saying that doesn't exist sometimes, but by and large, women today are doing very well. We're able to make the choices that we'd like to, and that's all very positive, and we want to certainly make sure that that remains that way. But there is an assumption in this budget, and I think it's a created one, and it's done on purpose, which is to say that the opposite is true, that we are held back, that we don't get into various fields because of largely discrimination, and therefore incentives are necessary to make that happen. So I don't accept that premise. Certainly, you know, there's pockets of places where this wouldn't be the case, and, you know, those things need to be corrected. But by and large, women are doing well. And the other thing this budget really ignores is that the data shows us that in many instances, men are not doing well. And there's disagreement over why that is, and there's disagreement over policy reactions or how we might fix that. But I don't think that there's much disagreement, over the fact that there's been a lot of job losses in traditionally male-dominated fields recently, and that a lot of men are not adjusting to the new economy as well as they might be or could be. So that's something that we ought to, in a gender, if we're going to, gender means both genders, we ought to be taking a look at that and not, you know, brushing it under the carpet.
Are there not, though, barriers to women entering the workforce? Are there not barriers to women entering traditionally male-dominated jobs?
You know, where I see barriers for women entering the workforce is when they do precisely what they choose to do, which is stay home for a certain amount of time because they want to and they want to be home with small children. Re-entry, if that time extends beyond a one-year mat leave, can be difficult for women. And so I can see cultural changes we need to make, and we can talk about that, and business changes as well. And it certainly is advantageous when we make it easier for women who have been working in the home to enter into the workforce. But I don't accept the premise that there's male-dominated fields where women are not welcome. I did, in fact, suggest that the opposite is true. There's been such a push on getting women into non-traditional fields that women are there and they feel welcome, and those who are interested go into it and they succeed and thrive.
Why is it then that fewer women run for office than men? Here in Ottawa, for example, I think it was in 10 of the city council races last time around, no women ran for the position, and there are only 4 out of the 24 seats on city council that are held by women.
I think it comes down to personal preference. I think it comes down to just choices that women make and their desires and how they feel about that. On the flip side, I did happen to watch the debate for the Progressive Conservative leadership, and of course there's 3 out of 4 women running there. So why city council has lower numbers, I'm never going to be the one to say that we need to have perfectly equal numbers in order for our lives to be equal. I think that in point of fact, the field needs to be open, and women who want to join and jump in can. Mentorship is important, and leading, just talking to girls if they're interested in politics, encouraging them. But this is not the purview of government to say that we ought to have a 50-50 split or spend more money on that kind of thing. I think it comes down to choices, and we do not spend time worrying about the fields where men have lower numbers, and I'm not sure why that is. It is very important for young boys in kindergarten or daycare to have male role models, and that's not something that men choose to do as much. So why aren't we concerned about that? We're not micromanaging men's lives in that way.
So equality doesn't mean 50-50 splits in every profession. It just means everybody has the same opportunity. Is that what you're saying?
That is indeed what I'm getting at. And if we become so concerned about the numbers, then we ought to be concerned about the numbers where there are fewer men working in particular areas as well.
Yeah, like nursing, for example.
Exactly. And I actually truly do believe it's important for young boys to have male role models in the classroom. And we don't see as many male daycare workers, for example.
Yeah. So how do you take this budget then? Is it patronizing? Is it paternalistic? Because this is in the context of the Trudeau government presenting itself as a feminist government.
Yeah, well, I do take it as paternalistic, and I flip it and say, if we spend that much time talking about what men need to do, what they need to change, how they need to be different, I'm not sure how that would go over just emotionally. But certainly, as I said, there's different reasons why government work in different ways, and improving the economic prosperity of the country and raising the GDP is a legitimate goal of government. Just don't tell me you're doing it for gender equity purposes. They really layered that on a bit too thick.
All right. Andrea, great to talk to you again. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks so much. Have a great day.
You too. Andrea Morozik, who is Family Program Director at CARDIS, a public policy think tank, and writes in the National Post.